We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Culture Vigilante, and you are listening to Lisa Payne Nager. We're here every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, along with the other Missouri Grassroots groups. We broadcast several nights a week here. Happy to have Cynthia Davis with me here tonight. She broadcasts every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. with her show Homefront. Thanks for sitting in with me tonight, Cynthia. I'm so glad to have you.
It's a pleasure and delight, Lisa. It's great. I know. How else are we going to fix the country?
Well, you know, and it's the women. I've always been convinced it's the women who are going to lead this charge. And Cynthia has been working on this long before the Tea Party ever got started, long before any of us were really ever that politically active. Cynthia is a former state rep here in Missouri. She served 8 years in the Missouri House of Representatives and was termed out and served as the chairman of the St. Charles County Republican Central Committee here, and several other things for many, many years. She's just been very busy over the course of time, raising a family, homeschooling, and she's a small business owner, too. So I don't even know, do you ever sleep, Cynthia? Do you, you know, how do you get through the day?
It's hard to sleep when you're watching things fall apart. So yeah, maybe we do pace the fortnight a little more than most people, but somebody's got to be vigilant and be out there watching what's going on and call the sirens. If we're going awry, it's time for us to pick up the microphone and say, folks, let's do it better now. We can try again. Let's move forward and let's be better than we are. This is America. And the beauty of our country is we have the freedom of speech and we have our ability to get out there and let people know what's happening. And whether people like it or not, it's time to call a siren if things are not right. And we've seen a lot of things go the wrong direction in the last few years. And part of it is because we've been silent. And we believe the best in everybody. We believe if we're just good and nice to everybody, it will all work out in the end. Well, the facts don't match up with that. The economy is worse. Unemployment is worse. Universal health care is becoming a reality. Mm-hmm. And this let's all be nice to each other isn't getting us where we need to go. Actually, it's marching us right off the edge of the cliff. So I don't want to sound like we're shocked or alarmed or anything, because really the truth is there are more good guys than bad guys out there, and all it's going to take is for us good guys to get together, and that's the beauty of Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is showtime, folks. It's time to pull together, to be strong, and to connect the dots for people, because I believe when we do get those dots connected, we are going to come up with a much better way to go.
Absolutely. You know, Cynthia and I were at a dinner last night. We were at the Coalition for Life dinner. We were having a little conversation at the dinner table, and we were kind of talking about the Tea Party and how the message has kind of changed, how it's been altered over the last couple of years, and how the effectiveness may or may not be really. There's been a lot of conversation in the grassroots movements for the last many months, maybe the year or so, about has the Tea Party died? What happened to it? Where did it take its turns? What do you think about that, Cynthia?
We're in a retreat mode. A lot of people got the old expression, we got our butts kicked last November. And we saw some really good people go down in flames. I'm talking in Missouri here. We saw Jim Lemke get defeated. We saw Ed Martin get defeated. We saw Todd Akin get defeated. We had some sour and bitter defeats. And it really surprised a lot of conservatives, a lot of people who believed that we were going to take up new high ground now, and people had 4 years to observe what Obama was going to do to this country. So now we're going to, obviously, the pendulum is supposed to be swinging back the other way toward more freedom, more liberty, more conservative values, more fiscal responsibility. And we didn't see that in November. And a lot of people are like, oh, no, well, then I'm out of here. I'm bailing. Forget this. I tried being politically active, and look at where it got me. Nowhere. We're losing now, and goodbye. I'm going to go call a realtor and see if we can move into a cave somewhere.
You know, I know people who've left the country. They've had enough. They don't think that it can be saved. They've actually left the country.
I write a newsletter every week also, and I put a joke at the end of every one of my newsletters. So even if you want to just hear the joke, you should sign up. But the one I did yesterday was, if Obama wins, I'm leaving the country. If Romney wins, I'm leaving the country. I'm not bitter about the elections. I just want to travel.
Well, nobody's traveling right now because there's an international travel warning across the world, you know, because of the terrorist threats in the Middle East. What do you think about all that?
Well, I think it's time for us to actually get our information from other sources, because this is the beauty of the internet. Is we can learn what's going on without having to be fed the pablum that comes over the TV every night. So I have a new website that I've created just for my new radio show, and it's CynthiaDavis.net. Just my name, CynthiaDavis.net. And I also have a new Facebook page, and that one is called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. The name of our show is Homefront. When you think about the front we're fighting right now, it's starting right here in our own homes. So we are out to make a difference. We've had some excellent guests. And what's great about this internet format is you can call in, all of you can call in and ask questions of true experts that you normally wouldn't have access to. So we are on Tuesday nights from 8 to 9, and I have some – what also is great about the internet is we now can connect dots for people even beyond the borders of Missouri. There are people all over the country who love Missouri values, and they love the independent, fierce freedom that we all love here, too. So I've got some magnificent friends out in Washington State who have stood with me in this battle, and they believe in what we're doing enough that they wanted to help with designing my website. And I was so honored, because I know how to run the state of Missouri, but I don't know how to design websites.
Well, you're in good company.
Yeah, I said to my friend out there in Washington State, this is so nice of you because we are making strides, but why do you do this? For me, a former legislator, I'm not even in office anymore, why is that you perform such an act of kindness? And he said this, if Sean Hannity or if Rush Limbaugh or if Bill O'Reilly were saying the kind of stuff that I'm bringing up, he said I wouldn't even bother with it. But you are offering the kind of information our listeners are not going to get anywhere. So, Lisa, we're presenting material that you're just not going to get with other conservative talk shows. We are making a difference. We're all doing it together. I'm not saying that I'm better than all of those guys, but I'm saying we all offer a facet, a different angle of the same picture. We're looking at the country. We're looking at the state. And we're saying unless the grassroots can pull together, find out what's going on, and make ourselves informed, we can't make a difference. So I believe education is the answer, and that's why I would give up my Tuesdays to try and get ready to do a great show for everybody. And having you piggyback with me together, People have great shows every night of the week. And if they're busy, the beauty of podcasts is people can listen to it any time of the day or night. So if you have insomnia also, you can turn on the Internet and hear something that will give you hope and make a difference. So the premise of my show is we're about making people bigger and government smaller. And if we can find a way to do that, we can get this monster back in the box.
Well, that's absolutely it, and it's really all about information. You kind of set this up for me beautifully, Cynthia. We're kind of this show this week. It's kind of a coincidence that everything kind of fell into place so beautifully. There's been a lot of news in the news about news this last week or so. There's been a lot of stuff going on about how people get their news. We have with us this evening, tonight, will be Larry Connors, formerly of KMOV. Most of the people in St. Louis are very well aware of Larry Connors and the issue that's been going on with his former employer, KMOV-TV here. He's been a longtime news anchor here in St. Louis. He has a very long and illustrious career as a news anchor. And there was some controversy here in May when he was released from his contract at KMOV. We're going to talk to him a little bit later about that and about news in general and maybe what his plans for the future are. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to have Dwayne Lester from the Missouri Torch. He's going to be with us. He's done just an amazing job of covering the Missouri issues, the scandals with the governor's office, with the DOR, and Medicaid expansion, and he bulldogs the Missouri legislature, and he covers all of that just beautifully. He's going to be on with us to talk issues and events. And last week we introduced something that should be a huge news story that isn't a huge news story, but I hope that it will be. There is a landfill issue. Most of us who have lived in the St. Louis area in Missouri have known for a long time there have been nuclear waste sites here. Never really got a lot of coverage. There's a brewing situation in the Maryland Heights area, which is a suburb of St. Louis, that has a nuclear waste site on it. And we had Don Chapman on with us last week to help us break that story. A lot of health issues are arising from this area. There's a lot of cover-up from the government. We're going to talk to Dawn a little bit more. We're going to have her on for the next couple of weeks to kind of give us an in-depth update of what's really going on with that story. And hopefully, if we can light the fire under the grassroots, that the mainstream media will start to pick up that story and carry it because it's huge. And we'll have Pastor Danny Holliday. There's a great event going on in Alton, Illinois, a little bit later on this month. I know, Cynthia, you watch the news very fervently. Most of us, we're all very well aware of the race baiting and the racial division that has occurred in the Obama administration. And Pastor Danny Holliday is creating an event in Alton, Illinois in a couple of weeks that we hope that you'll all be able to attend. And we'll try to shed some light on those kinds of issues and try to promote a little bit of healing in that area, that those sores that have been scratched open and since the Obama administration has taken hold.
You know, what's interesting about the race stuff is we're all very loving, actually. I don't know anybody who's a real hater, except they're trying to make it look like we're a nation of haters. I don't even know anybody who judges people based on their skin color. Maybe you can say a rather sheltered life, but that's not reality. So for them to go out and present reality as if we all now have all this adversarial relationships is patently wrong, and it's insulting to the beauty of the American spirit, because we are a good people in this country, and trying to fabricate that we're not is downright insulting.
Well, you know, and I think, and it's my opinion, Cynthia, that this race baiting is coming from the other side of the coin here. Before Obama was elected to office, I'm a woman of a certain age. You know, I've been around for a while, and I've watched things kind of come and go. And I've watched the racial relations. They were pretty calm, in my opinion. before Obama was elected to office. And when he got elected to office, everything is about race. And you know, here recently with the Trayvon Martin case, and here in St. Louis right now, we're dealing with another school busing issue again. Who would think, you know, we just never learn from our mistakes. We're, you know, and it's again, it's a racially motivated thing, or they're trying to turn it into a racially motivated issue. You know, race is just in everything now, and it hasn't been that way for a very, very long time. And it's just, it's the old divide and conquer. It's intentionally being put forth, in my opinion, by the other side to divide and conquer the country, to kind of shred the fabric of America.
And I'm a woman of age, too. I was born in 1959. I'll just tell everybody.
Oh, you are such a brave woman.
Yeah, they want to. Hey, when you've been an elected official, they print that stuff in the newspaper, so who are you kidding? But you know what? I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and I don't remember ever feeling like there was any race issue even there back then. All I know is we like to play old maid, and that was fun, and we judge people by how good they can play kick the can, how well they can do Red Rover. And all I know is I came home one day, and I said the word ain't, and my parents had a severe reaction and said, we don't use that word in this house. Don't you ever say ain't again. And that was about it. That's all there was.
Yeah, I mean, life was simpler then. You know, it was not nearly as complicated as things are today.
And we were taught you love your neighbor and you take care of your people. And you be kind and generous and considerate and compassionate toward everybody. And that's about all there was. So I am saddened. I think some of this attitude is making it worse the more we make it sound like there's a big awful thing going on. But if we stay loving and kind and generous, I think that really is what we're made of. And that's what makes grassroots generous. I know with your Santa Claus deal that just is another facet of how we are the people who don't care about color and skin.
Right.
We care about being helpful in propelling the country in the right direction.
Yeah, we ought to be thinking about private charities instead of race baiting. Here's something that I got in. I got an email this week. I signed on to the change.org thing to see what they would send me. So, and this just punctuates the point here that I think the race baiting is absolutely coming from the other side, and the division is coming from the other side. And this is it's a email about the Trayvon Martin issue. Okay, it's done. It's over. The jury has given its verdict, and so here I get this email: justice for our son Trayvon. Stand your ground, laws must be reviewed. And it's a petition they want me to sign, and it starts out, last year our son Trayvon Martin was stalked, chased down, and killed by George Zimmerman, and Zimmerman received no punishment whatsoever. That's in large part because Florida is one of at least 21 states with some form of stand your ground law, which enables people like George Zimmerman to claim self-defense. Okay, and it goes on, and I'm not going to read the entire email, but okay, in the first sentence of this email, they've labeled George Zimmerman as a stalker and outlined a number of falsehoods that never came out in trial. And people will read this email, and because they may be low information news gatherers and low information voters, they're going to believe what they read in this email, and it's just more part of the race baiting issue. I think it's part of the Obama administration's agenda to weaken Second Amendment, and generally just let's divide and conquer. Let's destroy the fabric of America. It's just appalling to me.
And everywhere he can, it looks like his goal is to get everybody all agitated. That's a Saul Alinsky tactic, that if he can get people to riot. And I'm not imputing motives on other people, but I will tell you this much. Every time there was a fork in the road and this administration had an option, do we do A or B, they picked the one that would cause America. Yeah, they always pick the wrong one. I can't think of one time when we've done something that we can all feel good about yet. So we're moving the wrong direction. The voters aren't, obviously, the voters put a Democrat Senate in Washington, D.C. They put a Democrat president in the White House. And that's what we're going to, they put a Democrat governor in Missouri. Mm. And they put a Democrat secretary of state. They wanted a Democrat attorney general. There's
Isn't
a
that
point
interesting
where
how that
cannot,
turns out?
Yeah, we're going to, the only option we have is to educate people. And if they can't be educated, then we have nothing to work with. But again, that's what's so great about all of us on Missouri Grassroots Radio is that's our effort to help people
yep.
see what's going on. So thank you for
yep.
letting me be on. And my website is cynthiadavis.net. You need to go just to look at it. And, oh, I would love it if any of you could like my Facebook page, Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Just like it to be nice. Would you just like it just to help me get up to 500 likes?
There you go. We'll all be there. So, Cynthia, thank you for coming on with us tonight. Feel free to stay on. We're going to have Larry Connors up in a minute. I can't wait to talk to him. I'm so excited about having him on. Go Tuesday nights, 8 p.m., right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio, Cynthia Davis with Homefront. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Larry Connors.
Hello. It's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on The Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, seems to certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We are back. We're here every Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. I am so excited to have our next guest with us, a major icon in St. Louis media, and actually a wonderful conservative, as I've come to find out, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, Mr. Larry Connors. Mr. Connors, thank you so much for agreeing to be with me this evening.
Lisa, thank you, and it's just Larry. Okay.
Okay. Well, I know that you're busy, but I have several questions that I want to ask you, and I thank you for your time this evening. I know you've got other engagements going on, but I got to ask. I know that you're limited in what you can speak about, but let's kind of rehash the past here. You have been a long-standing anchor at KMOV. I mean, I remember you being at KMOV since forever, as far as I'm concerned. You've always been with KMOV, and I know that you had a long career before you came to KMOV. You're an institution here in the St. Louis area.
Thank you.
And you recently left KMOV, not of your own choosing,
over a
Facebook posting.
Yeah, this is my 50th year in broadcasting, and I came to St. Louis thinking I'd be here for 2 years, and that was 1975. I was hired originally by Channel 4. At that time, it was owned by CBS. I worked for them from 75 to 79. And then from 79 to 86, I worked for Channel 2 here, which was at that time an ABC affiliate. And then in 86, I got hired back to Channel 4, and I've been with Channel 4 since that time. So 38 years in St. Louis, 28 at Channel 4, and as their prime anchor for the last 28 years. And what I did on the Facebook posting was simply raise a question. And the management didn't like it. Normally when you get negative stuff, you always get the negative blowback first, and they reacted harshly and weren't sure how to handle it. And then they forced me to read a statement which was unclear and misleading. It would not allow me to edit it so it would be correct. And then after I read their statement, then I was fired.
You know, we live in Missouri, and Missouri is a work-at-will state. they can do this if they want. They, you know, they can fire you for not liking the way you dress, or, you know, they can do anything they want. They can fire you for anything. And they certainly have the right to fire you if they wanted.
But what a horrible
public relation.
You know, one of the issues we're raising, that we did file with the EEOC on age discrimination and retaliation for a previous incident I'd been involved with them, and we knew they were going to look for a way to get rid of me. So they, you know, to my, to all appearances, even if I, they had said they had a Facebook policy, which was never presented to me. I was off a workman's comp leave. I came back and I was told it was there, but no one ever gave it to me. And on top of that, while I did nothing wrong, if I violated such a policy, that's not 28 years as a news anchor, 38 years in St. Louis, 50 years in the business. If I had credibility and integrity issues, the crack would have been seen long before now. But they cited that as a reason to let me go, and that would not be terminable reason. You might suspend me. I would have probably fought it. They might discipline me. That's fine. Or train me in what they want me to do. That's fine, because they wanted us to make these Facebook postings and often encourage personal perspectives, which is what I did, reference an IRS issue and a President Obama interview. And the bottom line is, you don't fire someone for that type of thing with that type of history. And I'm not talking about Larry Connors. I'm talking about anyone else who had that background. I wouldn't fire them. You might deal with them and talk to them and have closed-door meetings. Don't cross that line again. And you go on. It's not like I killed anybody. I didn't get caught with drugs. I wasn't caught in a DUI. I didn't even defame anyone. I simply raised a question.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, what a PR nightmare for these folks. I mean, I can understand if, you know, companies fire people. They have whatever their reasons are for wanting to get rid of people. They have them. No one, you know, no one can analyze that. But I read recently also in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, there was a story about you receiving a job offer, and they're trying to block that in, because you have evidently in some part of your contract a no-compete clause in your contract.
I do have a non-compete. I'd only been under this contract for 3 weeks when they fired me because the posting happened after that. And up to that point, they've been praising what I was doing on Facebook, encouraging me to do more. One manager even said, I need you to train others in the operation how to get that kind of response and get that kind of talk generated. And the post I made referenced the IRS and Obama, and was I being, you know, targeted, raised in question only, not taking a position, had about 85,000 reached before they yanked it from me, and I couldn't see what happened. I'm sure it went above 100,000, but I don't know. But it was 85,000 at that time. And I had a non-compete, and so our point is you terminated me, so the contract was illusionary. It's only one-sided. You did not give me another option. You terminate me under the case. I do not have proprietary information about the station. I am not an ownership in the company. I did not choose to leave to go to work for your competition. So the non-compete should not hold. A judge last week refused to give us a temporary restraining order and wants to hear a full evidentiary hearing in September 3rd, which is fine. And, you know, we would have liked to have it then, but it's a hollow victory either way, because you need the full non-compete removed. So TRO is going to be a part of that. So, you know, 30 days one way or the other at this stage means nothing. So that's fine. We'll resolve it then. And in between then, you know, maybe the station will step up and let's say, let's resolve this and move on, which is what they should have done. And you're right. PR nightmare. When they did that, that was going into the Labor Day weekend. That was on Wednesday they fired me. That was the last day of ratings when they made it public that they fired me. And that weekend went into the Memorial Day weekend, and they got hit so hard on their webpage by folks supporting me that they had to shut down their webpage the entire Memorial Day weekend. Came back looking different, and they said, well, we were just trying to redo our page. You don't do that on Memorial Day weekend. You know, and there's loss of revenue and contacts and everything else, but that was their story, and that's fine. They can say what they want. All I know is that in this business, you don't shut it down on Memorial Day weekend. That means you got extra people working overtime, trying to resurrect it, but basically, they got hammered by the public, who was upset. Since then, I've started my own Facebook page, which I have full control over, Larry Connors USA, Larry Connors USA, that's ERS, and I started May 22nd and 23rd, and already we're 4,500 or so and growing, and I reach I made a post the other day about President Obama and his remarks about 35 years ago, Trayvon Martin could have been me. I made a post reference on that, and I think we hit something like 35,000 reached on that one.
Wow.
So it's alive and firing, and glad to have folks joining.
Let's talk about the Obama issue. You had an incredible interview with President Obama shortly before the reelection, I believe it was. A very hard-hitting interview, very fair. I have to tell you, Mr. Connors, in all the years that I've watched you, I never really picked up a bias from you. I never knew which way you leaned, where you went with issues.
That's the way I do it. That's the way it should be done. You're right. That's the way it should be done. And you're correct. I have covered Democratic conventions. I've heard people say that, well, you were really at home. You really love those Democrats. And I go cover the Republican convention and say, well, you obviously are a Republican, by the way, you covered that. That's fine. And this is probably the third White House interview I've done with the president, probably the Well, I've interviewed every president back to Nixon except for Clinton. And in the process of that, you know, I've asked tough questions of each and every one of them, you know, to the extent I could. And they didn't like the questions, but that's okay. They should know that. And the question I asked, well, I asked several questions. First of all, he had me up there along with four or five other journalists from across the nation to talk, to promote the Buffett rule at that time, trying to get tax changes, citing basically if Warren Buffett's secretary is taxed more than he is, something's wrong. Well, of course there's something wrong. But if folks don't, if the rich don't like it, then they can write a check for more taxes. You don't change a tax code for everybody else. Write another damn check if you want to pay more taxes. But anyway, I went up there to do that. I let him have his speech and you know, trying to keep it not a monologue so that I could ask some questions. I asked him a question actually on behalf of Sharon, Claire McCaskill's people, and the fact that she had asked that they'd come down to Missouri and help her campaign at that time. She was facing a very tough election. That's before Todd Akin's meltdown. And they had not gotten any response from the White House. And so I put that question to him, why aren't you down there helping her? And his answer was, well, Claire is a very good independent from Missouri, so sidestep that issue. I asked him about, he made remarks prior to the Obamacare Supreme Court ruling about his statements and how he was using the presidency as a bully pulpit to, you know, tell the judges how they decide, should decide. He answered that. Then I asked a question which was on a lot of minds, and we had some viewers question it, and I didn't have to have viewers others do it. I'm capable of asking a question anyway. I am an American citizen, taxpayer, voter as well, but others have raised this question, and it's nothing new, and it's just that no one had asked it, and I simply said a lot of folks are upset because at these tough economic times, they can then afford a road trip with their family for vacation. They see the first family jetting to Spain, Europe, and they think you're out of touch. And that video, there are two cuts of video. If you watch it from the head onwards, looking right at him, the side view, you don't catch it. But from the head on scene, it's on YouTube. It looks as if I'd reached over and slapped him. His head jerks. He looks at me tautly and says, so you have some viewers. How many some? And I said, we have some. You know, I'll have to justify numbers. Right. And then he went into, you know, it got cold and distant and said, you know, well, first we have to travel on Air Force One. I don't deny that. I want my president on Air Force One. The point was, in this economic time and time, how can you do that and be out of touch with the American public when they're suffering and you're jetting off on all these excursions? Now, since then, a lot of folks have said, well, President Bush, the last President Bush took more vacations. He did. But he went to his Crawford Ranch, Texas. Texas, he didn't get all over the world in the process. So, you know, that really, and it was a different economic time. I'm not justifying what Bush did or anything else. And the very next day, after I posted my post about how Obama might announce some IRS rogue agents might have been targeting and giving me more pressure than they had previously before that interview, I also point out how the Republican Party had used the IRS in the past cases under Nixon, under Bush, to go after opponents. And basic line is no White House administration should use the IRS as their arm to crack down the American public.
That was an excellent interview, and you certainly stirred things up on a lot of levels with that interview. Let's switch gears a little bit. You've got a long-standing career in the media. You've seen it evolve and change over the years. And now we are certainly in a new era of media, and there's been a lot of talk about media over the last week. What do you think of the new influences of the new media and all of the citizen journalism and how that's shaping the media right now?
Public citizen and journalism is back to the basics of journalism. I mean, that's how it all started. I mean, you know, Thomas Paine, I mean, they start by writing a paper, and then someone picks it up and reads it, and they pass it along. That's all fine. And for anyone to say that, you know, I'm a journalist and you're not, well, I might be paid for my work and maybe you're not, and I might have a higher standing, I might have a bigger audience, but anyone can be, quote, a journalist to that extent or voice an opinion. That's what we're all about. And I do think that social media has expanded that, and it's a good thing. I also think that my case has highlighted what is going on in newsrooms when they want their reporters and anchors to post on Facebook something driving and really pulling the audience to the station and so forth. If I wrote a post that today was a beautiful day and I walked outside and looked at the arch and saw the sun on the arch, it looked so pretty, no one's going to read the damn thing. You got to write something that's going to be provocative. You got to engage the audience. You got to deal with current issues. And that's what I've done with my Facebook. And they were liking the numbers and response until they felt that I stepped over the line. And it's a political line for them. There's clearly, because the general manager sat across from me in one of the meetings, the first hand after, and said, today I got 400 to 600 emails over your post. He said, and I'll tell you, most of them were in your favor. And I thought, well, that's good. And just earlier this week, a newspaper editor in Tennessee was fired because his paper didn't like what he did reference one of their postings. You know, so they want journalists, to their TV anchors, reporters, to do these things, but the same token, it's a chilling effect because a lot of reporters say, well, gee, if they could get rid of Larry Connors with his history and what he did, and all you can ask a question, I'm kind of worried about what do I put on there that won't get me in trouble. So it chills a lot of reporters and anchors on the Facebook social media.
Well, I don't know if you can really answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. With that aspect going on in the media and the pressure that's coming down from the powers that be in each media area to kind of rein in their reporters, do you think that this is in retaliation for people going rogue and bringing in the conservative side that maybe the left doesn't want to have reported?
Well, I'm not going to say the managers are leftist or liberals of the station, but they bow to that pressure because, again, why would, unless you're looking for another issue, which we think they were age, you don't fire an anchor with that standing. And I'm not talking about Larry Connors. I'm talking about anybody with that standing in a station. I'd be raising the question, why would you fire the guy unless you're trying to, you know, send a message and, you know, in this case, also get rid of a high salary and an older anchor? So they're going to make their decisions on whatever they choose, and it's a bottom line sometimes. Sometimes it's political backlash and reaction. I know when I did the Obama interview, we ran a cut that day at 5 o'clock, and again, I didn't go out there to make news. I went there to do my story and bring hard-hitting questions. We did that story at 5 o'clock about Obama's reaction. At 6 o'clock, I had another report and just did an entirely different story. At 10 o'clock, I went back to the story that was obviously catching fire and had gone viral. And I cut two pieces to air the next day, one dealing with that and one not dealing with it. And the next day I found out that they did not run the one that had caught fire, was viral, was the talk of the nation, to the extent that folks are paying attention. Don't get me wrong, I'm trying to inflate myself. I'm just saying what the fact was at the time. The station management did not run that one the next morning because they said, oh, we've heard enough of that. And I'm thinking, you're an idiot. If that's what causes interest, you know, and drives your audience, you put it on there. It's just a stupid decision. And in that case, it was a liberal decision, in my viewpoint, that they thought, well, we just better not put this on. We're getting too much liberal backlash. But then all the positive stuff started coming. You get reams of paper in these boxes, you know, 1,000-plus sheets. I've got maybe 1,000 to 1,500 sheets of emails, and they're individual email sheets. I'm not saying multiples on each one, but I ran them off. And I'd say 90-plus percent were in favor of me, and 5 to 10% of those in favor of me are so far radical right, I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. They're crazies and loonies, and they shouldn't be listened to. And out of the 10% or so that were against me, they're probably 5% to 10% of those were so far left that they should be put away in a little bit. But the other, you know, had their point. They didn't like it, and they expressed their point in a civil way. That's what this nation is about, civil discussion. And you don't have to be on one side or the other to be right all the time. You just have to be able to listen and make your point in a civil manner.
Absolutely. Well, Obviously, you're going to be wrapped up in these issues for a little bit of the foreseeable future. Have you got any other plans? Are there any other?
I do. I'm not ready to retire. I have a standing offer pretty much here in town, but I can't get into details about it right now. And they can't touch me until the non-compete's resolved, which I understand. I have for the first time in 38 years, I have the right to do endorsements or serve as an image spokesman for a company, corporation, institution, financial, banking, whatever. And so I'm weighing some of those. I'm only going to do two or three of those because I don't want to dilute the name, and it's got to be someone I really believe in and trust and integrity that I want. And I'm not going to go back. I don't want to go back as a news anchor, even if I went back to Channel 4. I want to go back as a news commentator. But we also have I can do news comment and make a mix of news and commentary so I can be free to do these endorsements if I want. But more importantly, I'm tired of, after 50 years of just rehashing the today's stabbings and murders and occasionally handling the big stories, which I've always wanted to be there in the chair if a major story broke, and I have been blessed to do that. I've been blessed so many times in my life with this career. I never thought it would be as successful as it is, so I've been extremely blessed right now. I'm just counting on the Lord to lead me as to the timing and everything else. If I had my way, it would have been done the day after I got fired, but that's not his timing. So we have to go through this and the legal process. We're working through it. I've got a supportive wife, Janet, who's right there with me, and family and friends and supporters. And I know many of your listeners are supporters, and I truly thank them. I've been humbled, truly, by all the response and the support I've received, and I truly appreciate it.
Well, Larry Connors, we certainly wish you the very best of luck. And until further notice, we're going to be following you on Facebook Larry Connors USA. And we hope that you'll come back and keep us updated on your status. And I really appreciate your time this evening. Thank you so much for coming
on. Lisa, thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Have a great evening. Thanks so much.
You too. Goodbye.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Dwayne Lester. No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And when you get ready to hire somebody, you need to check against the federal database to make sure the numbers on the cards aren't forged or real. But what really Congress needs to do is to use a biometric technology to create a new tamper-proof identification card for every legal foreign worker. That's what we need. We need a tamper-proof card.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Just had a great interview with Larry Connors. What a generous and gracious man. We wish him the best of luck. This show is kind of all about the news. We've got, news going on all over the place. There's a lot of news about news in the news this week. And one of the people that has been doing a great job of covering Missouri issues is Dwayne Lester of the Missouri Torch. I've been following him for the last couple of months very heavily. He's been doing a great job of putting all that information on his website, the live streaming of the hearings going on in Jefferson City with the Department of Revenue scandals and all of the other things going on. Thanks for being with me tonight, Dwayne.
Oh, no, thank you for having me on, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Okay, so Missouri Torch, what a great site. You're on top of it. You've got everything. Nothing goes untouched on the Missouri Torch. You've got everything, and the in-depth detail and the way that the streaming that you've got going on in the committee hearings. I'm kind of guessing that shining that kind of light in Jefferson City is making a few people nervous.
Well, it's surprising people. I can tell you that. What's nice is that the last time I was down in Jeff City, we had the people from Governor Nixon's office in there testifying, and when they were asked if they had spoken with any of the other witnesses, they said they had been watching the live streaming, and I looked around the room, and I was the only one live streaming. So it's definitely, you know, the governor's office is definitely aware that there are more eyes on what's going on, and that's got to make them a little nervous.
Well, most extensively, you've been covering the hearings. I mean, you've got your finger on the pulse of just about everything. But these hearings have really got me hot under the collar, and I've been watching the hearings and just being able to hear the testimony really just burns my britches. I cannot believe the kind of stuff that they're coming up with in these hearings that seems to qualify as an answer for questions that, you know, to me seems like, you know, grounds for impeachment. And I see a lot of tap dancing going on.
Well, what frustrates me is the inability for anyone to remember anything, and I want to qualify that. I've had to testify before in court under oath about things that had happened months prior, and I knew the day I was going to have to testify, and I knew that what they were going to ask me about, I didn't really remember that much of, so I took the time to go back and go over everything that I was going to be asked, if, you know, relevant to what I was going to be questioned about, so I had some kind of idea, you know, a good memory of what happened, and I brought things with me that I could reference to help me remember. But it's inexcusable the number of times these witnesses have come in and simply said they don't recall. They don't recall, and I can understand having some hesitation or not remembering, but saying I will get back to you. But these folks just say, I don't remember, and it's almost as if they didn't care enough to prepare for the testimony.
Well, I think that's it right there. It's very convenient for them not to remember. It's not in their best interest to remember. But what does it say about the other side? What does it say about the inquisitioner who is asking the questions? It's their job to find the answers and for them to just, you know, not dig deeper. I mean, they need it, as much responsibility falls on the committee itself as it does on the person being questioned.
I can see your point. I agree with that. There are some very good questions being answered or asked, and some of the directions that they've taken have really kind of opened my eyes. They were directions that I hadn't considered. And let me go through one what I'm talking about. We've asked a lot of questions about real ID because the question is, why are so many components of Real ID being implemented in the state when that's against the law? And Ed Ardini, I believe his name, if I remember right, Edward Ardini, a counsel to the governor, said that the way the law reads is that as long as things aren't being implemented in order to comply with Real ID, those things can in fact be implemented. As long as they're not saying it's to comply with Real ID. So a line of questions that followed that was along the lines of, were there discussions about making Real ID illegal when the bill was being debated? And everyone said yes. And what were those discussions saying? They were saying that the bill was a bad idea. Well, if the governor's office felt that the bill was a bad idea, why didn't they veto it? And that leads me to believe that's a great question. They could have vetoed it and simply said this would be bad for Missourians because of the things. They repeatedly said they would have trouble getting on a plane. They'd have to carry a passport. The folks who wanted to work at Callaway Nuclear Power Plant would have trouble. They could have cited all those things in the veto letter, but they didn't. They passed the bill, and then they continued to implement Real ID. But they just weren't. So the question is, were they using that justification from the beginning and implementing Real ID, but not really implementing Real ID? That's an excellent question they need to answer.
Yeah, and they need to press for an answer. You know, I watched that particular live stream, and I was just incensed. It reminds me of the Clinton days. It's the definition of what is the definition of is. You know, they're gonna let them off the hook over, you know, three little words in order to, and you know, I don't get it. I just don't see it.
I don't think they're gonna let him off the hook. I was at a Republican gathering in Northwest Missouri, and one of the speakers was a circuit court judge, and I asked him a question regarding the way the law reads and the intent of the law, and he wouldn't answer it. He said, that is something that could end up in my courtroom, and when he said that, I thought to myself, okay, yeah, that's a great point, because this could go from this bipartisan investigative committee to an actual lawsuit against the governor and the governor's office for breaking the law. So, you know, there may be a next step to this.
Yeah, which would extend the entire fiasco for how long? And
I don't know.
You know, I mean, I never got the impression that the Missouri legislature was interested in impeaching Governor Nixon. I think you're absolutely right. You know, the next step of this is probably going to send it to the courts, because it seems like the legislature sends everything to the courts. They even write legislation that sends everything to the courts. So, I mean, that would just be a very, you know, another way to drag it out so that they don't have to deal with impeaching a governor, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the tax cut, because that's the next thing that is going to be the big issue. You know, there were Republicans who they didn't think that they could get a vote for the veto. There's a couple of rogue Democrats who've come over to our side. You know, first Jones says that he wasn't going to go for a veto override, then he is going to go for a veto override. What the heck is going on?
Well, I think Jones was actually trying to get the hackles up on a lot of Missouri voters when he made that comment. I think what he was trying to do was awaken people to the fact that there are Republicans who are waffling. There are Republicans who are getting squishy, and he wanted to bring a little more attention to the fact that they may vote another way. And if we cannot get 109 Republicans out of 109 Republicans to vote for a tax cut, then there's something wrong with the Republican Party. We're supposed, you know, the Republican Party is supposed to be the party of tax cuts. If you cannot get 109 out of 109 to vote that way, there's a problem. So I think Jones was really trying to highlight the fact that there were some people who needed some pressure put on them, and he definitely woke the state up to the fact that there are some squishes. And a couple of them weren't too happy with the fact that I pointed them out. and, you know, it comes with the territory, but if you cannot, and I understand changing your mind on something when new information comes along. But it's not like they surprised people with this bill and you had to vote for it before you could read it and then find out what's in it. They knew it was in the bill. If you supported it then, you should support it now. And some of these folks live in very red districts and need attention put on them. And one of them is Jeff Grismore. He's in Kansas City. I haven't looked at his district, but I'm assuming if he was elected, he was elected by Republicans, and he needs to represent them. Nate Walker in Northeast Missouri, he's someone who voted for the bill and now saying he may not. So he needs some people call. And the fact that he's saying it is that he needs to do what's best with his people, and that's to not support a tax cut, that's troubling to me. It should be troubling everyone, especially people in his district.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it has been brought up to me that while everybody wants to see a tax cut, it's not going to be a very significant tax cut over a period of time for folks. But there is a question as to part of the bill that they put on a tax on prescription drugs. Is anybody talking about that?
Yeah, Governor Nixon's actually using that as a club to cement his veto. He's going all over the state talking about that. And I spoke with Senator Rob Schoff out of Northwest Missouri. He's out of St. Joe, actually. And he pointed out the fact that while that is in there, the Democrats and Republicans want to fix that. And the tax cuts don't go in effect until 2015. So you have the whole 2014 session to remove that from that law. and essentially fix the law. So it's entirely fixable. To use that as a reason not to pass the bill is disingenuous, because both Republicans and Democrats are already on record as saying that's bad and needs to be taken out.
I don't
even think it was intentional. I think it was just an oversight. And part of that comes from the fact that we have a lot of inexperienced legislators. Let me say that. One of the downsides of term limits is that you don't have experienced people in there writing laws, and so mistakes like this get made. But this is easily correctable, and it can be, it can be corrected before the law even takes effect. So it's a non-issue in my opinion.
That's an excellent point. Well, folks, if you have the opportunity, make the Missouri Torch part of your news gathering vehicles. It's a great site for everything Missouri news. We've got stuff on there today on the front page about the Blunt staff coming to St. Joseph on August 8th. Medicaid expansion, tax cut stuff, lots of good live streaming and audio or video from various sources. The governor's lovely mug is on the top of the page today. Dwayne, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate your time. I know you post on Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page every day, so there's plenty of ways to find you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can reach out to me. My email is easy. It's Dwayne@Missouri Torch. So don't be afraid to reach out. Especially need tips. If there's something going on in your neighborhood, let me know about it.
Okay. Well, hang on to and listen to the rest of the program. There's a nuclear waste issue going on out here in the St. Louis area that's pretty big, and it's not getting much press. So we'll send you some information on that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, Dwayne Lester of the Missouri Torch, folks. Go to MissouriTorch.com. Thanks, Dwayne. Come on again soon and keep us updated.
Anytime. Thanks.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We will be right back.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Lisa Payne Nager, you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I'm honored here today to be with Pastor Danny Holliday of the Victory Baptist Church in Illinois, and we're here today to talk about a great event that they are sponsoring over in the Alton, Illinois area, just across the river from St. Louis. Thanks for being with me today, Pastor.
Thank you for the invitation to be with you.
So, Pastor Holliday, this is kind of an interesting event. You know, I did a little research on this, and it's not necessarily a political event, but it has some political undertones. But you're trying to really just focus on First Amendment freedoms, basically for everyone. And you're doing this in a very interesting way. Tell me about this event.
Well, Lisa, as I looked at the media and looked at information that comes to all of us, one of the things that I thought about as a conservative Christian, and actually, if you're a Christian, you're a conservative. And watching the news and reading about the news and the media, it became clear to me that the Christian viewpoint does not get equal space and time that the other viewpoints get. So I conceived this idea of being born and raised in Alton, Illinois, that is the place where Elijah P. Lovejoy came from St. Louis to print a newspaper, and he ended up being killed in Alton because he was fighting to abolish slavery. He was reporting his feelings in his newspaper, and so I thought, what better place to have a freedom of speech, a First Amendment event than Alton, Illinois?
Well, because Elijah P. Lovejoy was a white abolitionist. He lived in the St. Louis area and the Alton area for many years, and he was an editor of a newspaper. Is that, am I correct to this point?
Yes, yes, that is correct. And, you know, you mentioned he was white. You know, when we think about the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, all Americans are interested and should be interested in these freedoms. And so I felt it's very important, especially at this time in our history, that we look at this First Amendment event, and the date of the event is the 21st. So that's the date that one of Elijah P. Lovejoy's presses was thrown on the bank of the Mississippi River. That's the reason for the particular date. But I think it's necessary for all of us to understand that regardless of who controls things politically, all of us want these freedoms given to us in the First Amendment, because we don't want anyone, Republican, Democrat, Independent, or otherwise, to unfairly put out information to us, because if they do, then we can't make good decisions as we look at the laws and who we will vote for in this nation.
Absolutely, and this is a great this is a great instance in history to wrap that around, because Elijah P. Lovejoy, the editor of a couple of newspapers here in the St. Louis and the Alton area, expressing his opinion about slavery, being persecuted for expressing his opinion about slavery. So it's a great way to celebrate the event.
Right. And one of the good things about trying to do this in this way is my goal is to try to bring people together, not to separate people and to look at the difference between different groups. All of us, all Americans are Americans. We're entitled to the same thing, so it's important. Elijah P. Lovejoy was not a black man. He was a Caucasian who gave up his life for freedom, for First Amendment rights. And so blacks especially should appreciate what he did in trying to fight for our freedom, to correct something that was done in the wrong way as far as blacks. But blacks, whites, all Americans should understand the importance of this First Amendment event in Alton.
Well, Pastor, in today's culture, where we see a lot of racial division, and I see it more so in the last few years, especially during the later years of the Obama administration, than I think I ever have in my lifetime, how do you feel about this event in terms of kind of healing some of that racial division that's been with the race baiting and the things that have been going on over the last couple of years?
Well, that's one of the major reasons I wanted to put an event together, because there needs to be healing. You know, there needs to be a bridging of the political and the racial divide in this nation. And those of us who say we are Christians, that should be a goal for our lives, to bring people together, not to separate, not to destroy, not to belittle, because all of us are God's children. And so we should treat people the way we would like to be treated.
It's a great event. It's a great idea. It's being held Wednesday, August 21st,
from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Lincoln Douglas debate site in downtown Alton. It's just yards away from the site where the fourth press was thrown from on the banks of the Mississippi River. You'll see Pastor Danny Holliday there. It's also sponsored by Pastor Roy Richard and Beth Hallis. I will post this press release with all of this information on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page, and you can find it also on the calendar page and get directions there. Thank you, Pastor Holliday, for joining us today. I so appreciate you for what you're doing here. This is a great event, and I hope you get a great turnout.
Thank you so much. We're expecting a great turnout. We have a pastor from Collinsville planning to bring 50 of his members here, and we love America. That's what it's about, bringing Americans together, amen, because we all want to make this country the best country that it can be. It's sad when we fight, argue, and fuss because people have a different opinion. People have a right to a different opinion. That does not mean that they hate someone because they don't agree with them. That's what First Amendment rights are about.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pastor Holliday. We'll see you on Wednesday, August 21st, at the Lincoln Douglas Debate Center in downtown Alton.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Don Chapman, Julie Pitsum, and Karen Nickel from the Westlake nuclear site.
Yeah, well, the thing that people need to realize is economics, you know, is not about numbers. It's about humans. It's a very significant component to what makes us human. It's a very different program. It's called Getting There From Here, and it's about building a roadmap to restoring constitutional governance in the United States. It's about how we can win elections nationwide with conservative small government principles. It's about how to build and broaden a coalition, a majority coalition that's committed to having a smaller government. And then the second night, I call dismantling the monstrosity. And it's about how practically to shrink the federal government, I mean really shrink the federal government, via the Republican Party, but we need a much, much smarter Republican Party, and one that's not scared of its own shadow. We need to have people who are seriously committed to constitutional principles, to family values, to a smaller government, running the Republican Party. And we need to have strategies, which is what the whole seminar is about, where we can make sure the benefits of smaller government are going straight to people. If you remember my first seminar, I love analogies. And in the first one, I talk a lot about cancer, how the government has really become a cancer that's consuming our economy. And in this one, I talk a lot about alcoholism, which is a very different disease. But politicians get to Washington and they become alcoholics. And, they can't understand how they could do anything but grow the government. And, you know, it's like we need to have an intervention with the government. We need to say, you know, you're out of control. You are an alcoholic. And you tell that to your congressman, and he's like, well, you know, we're gonna phase out my alcohol consumption over the next 10 years. But, you know, first, you know, I just ran out of scotch, so first thing I got to do is go to the liquor store. And then when I come back, we can talk about how we're going to, you know, phase out my drinking problem. That's where most people in Washington are holding right now. So it's about the necessity of eliminating government programs instead of cutting them. Because when you cut government programs, they just grow faster. The great divide in the Republican Party seems to be between a few hundred Republicans in Washington, on one hand, and everybody else. The millions and millions of Republicans all over the country really want to have a smaller government.
Folks, you just heard Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior. He's returning to St. Charles County here on August 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library for two nights of a free seminar so that you can learn about capitalistic values and free market principles. Bring your kids, bring your family, bring your friends, and join us at the Family Vision Library, 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peters, Missouri, on August 29th and 30th at 6:30 p.m. Go to Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org
For information on this event, it's all there on the calendar page, and I'll see you at the Family Vision Library on August 29th and 30th with Lauren Spivak.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That's right, we're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And this evening, we are once again joined by the great folks that are watching the developments at the Westlake Landfill, Don Chapman, Julie Pitsum, and Karen Nickel. Last week, we introduced this issue to you folks. This has been going on here in the St. Louis area in one form or another for decades. And it's just devastating as to what it's doing to the area, to the people, and it's certainly not getting enough attention in the media. There needs to be a lot more information that goes out to the general public about it. There have been a lot of folks that have banded together to try to get the information out, the truth out about what's really going on at this landfill area in the West Lake area. We have Don Chapman with us, Julie Pitsum, and Karen Nickel, like I said before. Ladies, thank you for joining me again this evening.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay, so last week we dove into this and just kind of gave a long, very large overview of really just what is at the tip of the problem here in the St. Louis area. It is monumental. I mean, this stuff, talk about, you know, Silkwood and Aaron Brockovich and all of those things that happened before. This is going to just put all that stuff to shame if this ever comes out. So Westlake Landfill, it's a nuclear dump. It's nuclear waste that was dumped out into the open at the confluence of the Missouri and Mississippi rivers. Huge, causing health problems everywhere, not getting a lot of government attention to take care of the problem. Dawn, what are we going to talk about tonight?
You know what? I think after the background that we did last week, tonight we should talk about how people live right next to this, and they don't know about it. They don't know. They've bought houses. They've started their families here in this neighborhood. Same thing around Coldwater Creek up there. And you know, when you buy a home, they have to disclose whether or not there's lead paint. But for some reason, you're allowed to buy a home next to a Superfund site with radioactive nuclear weapons waste just sitting on the ground, and nobody has to tell you anything about that. And I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I have a problem with it, too. Yeah, and probably all of the people that are coming down with health issues and everything else have probably got a problem with it as well. So where do we start? I mean, God.
I know Karen is on the phone, and I'll tell you what, Karen started the Facebook page here, the Westlake Landfill Facebook page, and her story is so important because, you know, a lot of people that grew up in North County remember this was dumped up there at the slabs, the St. Louis Airport site, and off of Letty Avenue, and it leaked into Coldwater Creek. A lot of those people were exposed to that, and then they moved. And they moved out here. This was just the next step, the next place to go. And, you know, you have Karen who's on the phone who's, you know, she can tell you her story. It's heartbreaking.
Okay, Karen, are you a longtime resident of the area?
Yes, I actually grew up in Hazelwood, not too many houses away from Coldwater Creek. I lived there as a child, and I played in the... There was a park right along the creek that would flood. The creek would flood up into the park a lot. And I spent many, many days there. You know, we're talking back in a time where, you know, kids really did play outside all
the time.
And, you know, you didn't go to other people's homes. Everyone was outside all the time. And, you know, even in the winter, you know, we would go sled riding down the hills at the park. I played softball. I swang, everything. Rode my bike. And, you know, I think Janelle touched base on this a little bit last week where the creek would flood, and it would flood up into our neighborhood and get onto the streets and then dry, and then it would leave us with the thorium and uranium and all the nice stuff that we were breathing in on a daily basis. And so my parents didn't know anything about this. You know, so I grew up and I moved away, and, of course, where did I move? To Maryland Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently found out about this about a year ago when I was doing some research with Coldwater Creek, because I have, for the past 15 years, have suffered from pretty severe bouts of systemic lupus, and uh-huh. never understood why I was sick. And while researching this, I went back to my street and people that I hadn't talked to in years, 30 years, to find out that many of the people on the street that I grew up on have passed away from cancer early in life, 40 years old. And
wow.
not only that, I found four other people on my block that has lupus. And since then, since all of the hours and hours of research that I've done, you know, I've found other people that have MS and infertility problems just on my street.
Wow.
And, you know, so I moved away, and I found out just a little over about a year ago that the same stuff is sitting about a mile and a half away from the house that I've lived in now for many years and have been raising my own children. And to find out that there is the possibility that my children are exposed to the same thing that has made me so sick and has lost, you know, and I've lost so many friends, and finding out all of these thousands of people that are, you know, have had cancer now or have passed away, I decided that more people needed to know about this. And this wasn't something that needed to be kept secret anymore. And like Dawn said, you know, people are buying houses here still. They don't know. They don't know what's going on. And with the impact of the fire, you know, it's such a huge threat, and it's information that everyone at least needs to know about. You know, whatever decisions people want to make, that's their own business. But I just felt like it's time that people know this, and it's time that we get educated on this, and we are able to make decisions for ourselves. My parents never had that choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up in the area, too, and we did not know about all of those things. So is there somewhere on your website that would tell us a list of the diseases and the types of cancers that people should look out for?
We don't have it on our website yet, but there is a list that we're getting ready to put up. It's the RECA list. It's the list that the federal government has acknowledged, you know, a list of 27 different cancers that do come from nuclear weapons waste. And there
mm-hmm.
are other illnesses and stuff, but we are getting ready to compile that and put that up. You know, that's a really hard thing to put up, too. I mean, you have to think and I get emotional talking about it, too, because what this does, when you find out that you live next to this, and like Karen said, when you find out that you grew up next to that, there is a mental component to this whole situation. There's a heaviness.
Yeah.
You know, when you're exposed to radioactivity, you're exposed. It's not like catching the flu, right? It's not like 2 weeks later it's going to go away, right?
Right.
I mean,
it lives in you. Yeah.
And there is a a mental component that plays with your mind. You know, if you, like Karen said, she raised her kids here, you know, and she knows what happened to her, and she knows what happens to the kids on her block growing up and her friends. What happens as a mom, you know, we're overprotective of our children anyway, but you know, when our kids have a headache, we have this thing now in the back of our mind. We have this peace of mind that is just completely shattered. You know, our kids have a headache and it lasts for a couple of days. Normal people will have a sinus infection, they're getting a cold. Us,
we think, oh, my God, do they have a brain tumor?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, we live with the big C word for the rest of our life. With any situation that occurs with our kids, our grandkids, you know, that's what we live with for the rest of our life, knowing what we know now. And it's, you know, I look back now, and my childhood, my innocence is taken away from me now. Knowing now that the whole time that I was out playing and no cares and no worries in the world, to find out that now my playtime made me sick. Eating vegetables out of gardens in the area made me sick.
There was actually a farmer down there in the bottoms by the river who everybody went to buy their produce from him in the summer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The most horrific thing that I find angersome is I live out in way in west St. Louis now in Lincoln County, and a lot of folks have moved from that area, and it affects your genes too. And that's just, you know, people have come to grips with that too. And I don't have any kids, but just the thought of, you know, being able to have a child someday and knowing that child could develop cancer because of me, that's another thing that has to come to grips with reality. I mean, it's horrific.
Right. There's a lot, you know, so when you talk about putting that list up, you know, Karen and I, you know, we're admins, and there's another admin, Beth, on our page, and, you know, you met Janelle last week on the radio. You know, our goal is to educate people. And we want them to understand this. We want them, like she said, to be able to make their own decisions. But at the same time, you kind of feel a little bit like the Grim Reaper, if that makes any sense. You know, like putting a list up and then, oh, my goodness, my grandma died or my grandpa died of this. Oh, and we lived here. You know, when they start putting the pieces together, you know, it's not our fault, and we recognize that. You know, we're just trying to help. But there's a part of us that at night, I mean, we've both took turns, you know, crying to each other about it because we do.
We feel like
we're shattering people's, like she said, you know, we're shattering people's memories. You know, they have memories of going and hunting Easter eggs, you know, at a church picnic, you know, and then they look back and think, oh, my goodness, you know, it was a beautiful spring day and the breeze was blowing, and then it hits them, oh, my gosh, the breeze was blowing. You know, we were, you know, a mile from the pile. Oh, my goodness, what were we breathing in? I mean, it does. It robs them of a certain amount of joy. It's just horrific. So there's more than just cancer and illnesses involved in what's happening. And when you talk about the possibility of that fire hitting that radioactive waste, as horrible as the exposure has been in the past, like we said, we can look back and we can see the illnesses. Can you imagine what that would do to the Midwest if that happened? I mean,
yeah. And let's just kind of clarify that. There's a landfill very near that site in Maryland Heights that is on fire, and there are some underground capillaries that are leading to the nuclear waste there. And the fire is burning underground, and it is well on its way to that nuclear waste. And no one has been able to get an answer about what exactly would happen if that underground nuclear waste catches fire.
Right, and here's the scary thing. This is the scariest part of that whole situation, is you have this landfill, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, owned by Republic Services. You've got a landfill that you do. You have a fire underground, and then 1,000 feet away you have nuclear weapons waste, very, very hot, potent, horrible nuclear weapons waste from the Manhattan Project. And there is nothing stopping this fire from hitting this waste, except they have drilled these two rows of wells, and they are using this technology that has never, ever been proven to hold back one of these fires. So the scary thing is that what's holding this fire back right now, these fires aren't held back. This isn't what happens. There's new technology that's being invented right now to try and deal with this situation, but nothing is certain. And at this moment, we are waiting, this community is waiting to hear back from a contingency plan from this landfill owner of what they're going to do if the fire should move past these intrusion wells. We are waiting on pins and needles. The Missouri Department of Natural Resources, the Attorney General, everybody is trying to wait for this company to come up with this plan of, hey, if this fire moves, this is what we're going to do. So that should scare everyone listening. There is no plan. If this fire moves tomorrow, there is absolutely no plan in place right now to deal with it and to stop it from hitting this nuclear weapons waste.
Okay, so let's switch gears just a little bit, not too far, about who are the agencies that are in charge of dealing with this kind of an issue? Obviously, you've contacted the owner of the landfill. What about the government? Are there government agencies involved? Is this, you know, what kind of a, is this an EPA issue?
It's an EPA because it's the Superfund site. The radioactivity, if you divide this landfill in half, the part with the radioactive waste is federal. That's Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. The part where the fire is a state issue. That's the Department of Natural Resources. So you have two agencies on two different levels that still see this as two separate problems. The EPA is very comfortable babysitting that nuclear weapons waste, just sitting there and watching it while the DNR tries to stop this fire. And the DNR, they're doing everything they can to try and stop the fire. They really are, and they're pushing this company. They got the Attorney General involved because they needed legal backup to force this company to do what it should have done years ago. But they have absolutely no say over the radioactive waste. They cannot make any decisions on what to do with that without the EPA. So it's kind of a right hand not talking to the left.
And never the twain shall meet. Has there been any communication with either of these agencies about why they're not communicating?
Not really, and you know, it's very interesting. The EPA, you don't really hear much out of them. Honestly, they are a very frustrating agency to deal with, I will tell you that. They're just so frustrated, and they don't really completely understand what they're supposed to babysit in the first place. But the Department of Natural Resources, when you talk to them, they're a bit more open, they're a bit more approachable, but the scary thing is that even talking to the community, because people do call them up on a daily basis. We try and make sure we're constantly having people call them, you know, just to let them know, hey, we're here and we're not going away. But we're starting to feel and hear a little bit of fear in them, you know, and a little bit of trepidation. There's a level of seriousness that's building every week with this. And, you know, especially I think because there is no plan in place should that fire just move tomorrow. There's nothing
in place. For 23 years it's been on the priorities list of Superfund site. It's about time, you know, they did something. I mean, that's been plenty of time. And, you know, that's what the DNR was saying too. So, yeah, it's getting down to the grind now. There's got to be a plan now.
It's been sitting on their list of priorities for 23 years, and they were just sitting back watching this fire burn?
Well, you know, the fire started 3 years ago, but this company did not come forward and did not report it right away. And when they did, they told the Department of Natural Resources, but the DNR, you know, the community, I just found out, for instance, a little over 6 months ago in January. A lot of people found out this past fall, and it had already been burning for a year and a half. So that is, you know, had this company had done the right thing in the beginning and reported this and had the DNR, this is part of the DNR's problem too, the DNR should have alerted the fire department and really gotten this going. I think they should have gotten the Attorney General involved a little bit earlier. We would not have this fire 1,000 feet from this radioactive waste. We could have done things earlier to minimize the spread of this fire.
So Chris Koster, the Attorney General, what kind of responses are you getting from him? He's a busy guy these days trying to avoid his governor being impeached, but what's going on with Chris Koster?
Chris Koster wants to be governor.
Yeah, I know.
He wants to run for governor, and, you know, I you know, he said, when you, if you remember, his whole platform when he ran for attorney general was, I want to be the people's lawyer. Remember, he wants to represent the little guy, and I'm the little guy. I mean, this community is the little guy. So, you know, we have put a lot of faith in him to stand up for us against this company and do the right thing. And, you know, he did move very fast. It's just not to say that it's not his fault. I think he needs to push really hard, and I still have a little bit of faith that he'll do that, especially if we keep calling him. But, this situation is so complicated. There is no textbook that you can open up and say, okay, let's look and see. What happens when you have a landfill fire next 1,000 feet from radioactive nuclear weapons waste? You know, this has never happened before. So there's no precedent. There's no chapter he can turn to, or any of them, the Department of Natural Resources. So they are reacting right now to this fire. They are, you know, they're trying to stay as far ahead of it as they can, but the truth is nobody really knows what to do to stop this fire, because landfill fires are not stopped. There's no reason to. Yeah. They're capped. Where else is there nuclear weapons waste that we know of in a landfill that's on fire, you know? We would cap the whole thing if that waste wasn't sitting there. We would cap the whole thing, and we would let the fire burn and try and control the odors and emissions as best we could. And we would just let it go until it ran out of fuel, until it ran out of things to burn. But obviously that's not an option because, you know, it has nuclear weapons waste it can burn. You know, that's not something we want to let happen. So it's very, very scary to think that there's really nowhere else in the world that this has happened. You know, we can't really predict what happens if this fire hits this waste. I mean, we know that there will be airborne particles. We know that, you know, that will happen. But just how bad and how far, I mean, it would depend on where the wind blew that day. You know? And then,
yeah,
you know,
it's just a ticking time bomb.
it really
is. About it, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can't hardly even wrap my head around it. It's just so huge. In fact, people aren't just swarming all over this, that you don't have government agencies swarming all over this, that this could be a huge, I mean, is it that they don't think that it's an issue, or is it that they don't know about it? Or, I mean, if they don't think it is an issue, why are they not publishing that information to get that information out to you people who are stirring it up?
Right. Honestly, I think that they don't want to panic people, you know, and I agree. The last thing that any of us wants to do is be labeled a fearmonger. You know, we don't want to just get people running right now and packing their houses. We don't. But at the same time, I think that they're being, you know, like you said, it's so hard to wrap your head around. It's so real what's happening here, and it's such an enormous issue that the first time you bring it up with somebody, they almost don't believe you. They almost think you're totally
extremely overwhelming.
This up.
Yeah.
It is. It's so big that you can't believe that it's real. I totally understand that. I mean, that's, you know, there's been
and
so
we
many
ran
things.
Into that with, like, elected officials, you know, going to Congressman Clay, going to Senator Roy Blunt and stuff. We sat in his office and spoke with his aide for about an hour with this. You know, they just don't understand. She got it after us sitting down with her, but it really does. You have to look at this information, and then you can see it on their face. Oh, my gosh, this is real.
So what did they say?
What did Senator...
Well, there has to be a realization. I mean, as far as I can tell, or we can tell, this is one of the... I mean, we're dealing with thousands of people or more that are impacted by this. I mean, you know, there's people
millions.
That have lived and moved away. I mean, millions. Yeah, I mean, this is probably the biggest cancer cluster in history we're dealing with, and that people have got to come to terms with this, including, you know, the government. I know it's overwhelming, but, you know, there's going to have to be some realization at some point, because there's not much time left with the fire.
Yeah, we have a new caller. This might be Ed, is this Ed Smith on the line? Hello? Oh, he's not listening, so I'm going to put him back on hold. Okay, go ahead. So I totally understand. It's a huge issue. trying to get people to really understand if it's real or not. There's some work involved in that, but basically, I mean, you know, the elected officials, Roy Blunt, and I think you've had some luck with getting some of the state reps involved and to notice what's going on.
We had State Representative Bill Otto has absolutely stuck his neck out and put his head on the chopping block for this community. You know, called for the emergency removal of this radioactive waste, you know, in his opinion, and the community does believe that. That's our opinion. You know, we're waiting for this contingency plan, like I said. Wouldn't it make sense that, you know, one contingency plan would be let's get it out, let's remove it, you know, for the EPA to step in. They've got a study in place, a feasibility study. They know where they're going to take the first shovelful, you know, and it's a very precise way that they remove this, you know, radioactive waste. They have a plan in place. They need to do a new record of decision and get this moving. That should be a contingency plan. If you can't stop the fire from hitting the radioactive waste, then remove the radioactive waste.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't belong
and
there
quickly.
Anyway. Right.
That's what it boils down to. Yeah.
How fast is the fire burning? How much time do they have before the fire hits the radioactive waste?
Right now it is sitting in between two rows of interceptor wells. And there is, it's hard to explain. If you know what a shell, like a peanut looks like in a shell, you know, the top little bulb part is, at the very top part right there is where the radioactive waste hits. And then at the bottom, that whole bottom little round area is where the fire is. And that little narrow area in the middle, if you can think of that, there's two rows of interceptor wells, and the fire is actually sitting in between those two wells. And there's actually a heat front in front of it. So you have a fire, kind of like sitting in front of a fireplace, right? You have a fire and you can feel the heat. The heat expands beyond that. What you have is right now it's not moving, but it is heating up. We can see, you know, the landfill owner and the DNR are posting temperature readings every single week. You can get on their website and you can look at how this fire is heating up. So, but what they know is that in the quarry, in the southern part of the landfill, it has moved as much as 3 feet a day.
Wow.
So yeah, if it were to jump tomorrow and move, at the maximum, it's moved 3 feet a day, it's about 1,000 feet away from the radioactive material. So we actually have
a
little countdown. No, it's really not. And you can actually, it is absolutely... It will scare you. You can stand outside of this landfill and you can see the distance because you can see where the radioactive material is. It's covered with trees and shrubs, and then you can see the neck area of the landfill. It'll give you an idea of just how far 1,000 feet is, and it's not very far.
Okay, I'm going to try to get this caller back on. Hello, caller?
Yes.
Hello? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who's calling?
Okay, this is Jennifer.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Okay.
Hi.
Welcome to the group. I'm assuming you've heard the discussion and.
I have. I have the same frustrations, obviously, as Dawn. I don't understand why, if they've known, you know, for years and years that this radioactive waste can be a potential. You know, issue for the environment. People in the community, we're still having this discussion and then now having to deal with a radioactive waste meeting a fire, it still can't get people to jump.
How long have you lived in the area, Jennifer? How long have you lived in the area?
I've lived off and on. I lived in Florissant for 8 years back in 7.
You're breaking up.
I came back in 2007. Can you still hear me?
You're breaking up a little bit. If you're on a cell phone, you need to stay still. Are you there?
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. I lived in Florissant from 87 to 2005 and then moved away and then I came back in 2007, and I lived on Coldwater Creek, where it would literally in my backyard, where it would go into our backyard, our water, our vegetable garden, and then into our basement. And, had a number of issues, you know, with endometriosis and miscarriages, and ultimately having a hysterectomy at 29, then to have leukemia being diagnosed at 33. So I've had, you know, just a lot of health issues, and I'm now seeing the same health issues start in my 17-year-old and my 14-year-old and my 12-year-old. So it's, we're seeing multi-generation, you know, illnesses from all kinds of horrific things that these people have suffered. And if the stuff continues to be exposed to the community around Bridgeton and Maryland Heights and whoever else, when, you know, this fire reaches the waste, you know, we're not supposed to call it a dirty bomb, but nobody can really tell us what's going to happen. And, you know, they said the fallout can be 4 to 5 times greater than Times Beach, and we know what kind of, you know, catastrophe that was. So I just don't understand why, you know, you read articles about us being protesters. We're not protesters. We're community members. We're moms and dads and sisters and friends and employees. And, we, you know, it's too late for me. My kids are already sick. I'm already sick. You know, thousands of us are already sick. But if we don't get this stuff moved and it continues to, you know, release benzene in the air, and God forbid whatever happens when the fire reaches the waste, we're going to have huge issues. And I don't understand why it's taking so much time and so much effort to get these people to rally behind us and help us. The EPA needs to step up. DNR, everybody needs to work together. We're not protesters. We are concerned citizens that want our kids to grow up in a safe, healthy environment. That's all we want. We want the stuff moved out. We need help getting, you know, getting it out there to people.
Okay, so what can we do? Obviously, we need, this is the big deal. I mean, you know, the EPA is just kind of, you know, they've got one eye on it and one eye off of it, and the Department of Natural Resources may not even be equipped to deal with this. You know, the state may just not have the horsepower to deal with an issue like this, and they're going to need federal funding and federal help to do it. And, you know, getting the federal government to get off the dime is going to be a real chore. So what have we got going that we – first of all, I guess what we need to do is to start screaming at our legislature.
We do, absolutely. You know, we it's your federal representatives, your congressmen and your senators that ultimately have the push that we need to really get this turned over to the Army Corps of Engineers so we can get this cleaned up, this radioactive waste. The DNR, and I will tell you, they are some of the nicest people you've ever spoken with on the phone. These are well-intentioned, well-meaning people. But you just absolutely hit the nail on the head. These people, this is way, way above their job description. This is just not, and, you know, it's not their fault. But at the same time, and I'm really going to ride the DNR here a little bit, just like they waited a little bit too long to get the Attorney General involved, they have a responsibility to this community to keep us safe. And if they can't do their job, as you know, as difficult as it is, nobody ever wants to speak up and say, hey, I'm not equipped to handle this, I can't do it. But you know what? Mm-hmm. We need them to do that, because at that point, that's when you get the governor's attention. You know, this is his agency. He's over DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. I'd like to see him step up.
Absolutely. Okay, so folks,
well, yeah, and the same thing with the EPA. P is for protection. They need, you know, we need protection. We need help. The Army Corps of Engineers is in St. Louis. Turn it over. They're the ones that are experienced with cleaning this up. They've cleaned up the other sites. It needs to be moved over to them.
There was an executive order issued by President Nixon in 1970, which did create the EPA, and that was to generally, you know, protect the environment from radioactive material. It's got to be done. And if they can't do it, like Dawn said, it's got to go to food prep.
Wow. Okay, so the first thing that folks need to do is they need to contact their local state representatives here in Missouri, start putting the pressure on so that they can put the pressure on the Attorney General and the governor, and so that they and move it up the food chain. If folks, if you go to culturevigilante.wordpress.com, and in the sidebar, you will see a listing of every single member of the legislature in the House and the Senate. Their email address is listed there. You can copy and paste that listing in an email, in your email field, and you can spam the entire legislature with one email. So go to culturevigilante.wordpress.com, copy those email addresses and put them in your email field and send them an email about this issue. You can also paste the link to this show in that email so that they can hear what has been going on here and what and the struggle that all of these people in the Maryland Heights, Bridgeton, Florissant, Hazelwood areas have been dealing with for decades and what their offspring will deal with for the rest of their lives. So culturevigilante.wordpress.com, paste those email fields into your email, send your legislature an email on this issue. We have another caller I'm going to try to bring on the line here. Let's see. It would help if their mic was on. Hello, caller.
Hi there.
Hello, caller. Yes. Who
Hi
am
there.
I speaking
My name
to?
Is Liz. Liz.
Hi, Liz.
Yeah, I have been writing my local legislature, my federal representation, my other state representatives, such as the governor. I write. It falls on deaf ears. The last round that I wrote, I contacted every state representative and every state senator. I got one response from a state representative down near Joplin, and he was supportive.
Really?
So how many letters and how many times do we have to keep writing? Because we are doing this, and we keep doing this, but nobody's listening, or they're only listening to the EPA and say, everything's fine. It's not fine.
Well, this is not something anybody's going to jump on this issue for sure. You're going to have to shame them into doing it, just like most of the issues with an elected politician. You have to shame them into doing the right thing most of the time if it's a controversial thing.
I'm hoping that perhaps the economic picture might change, because if it doesn't get over to FoosRep and get taken care of, in about 10 years, it's going to be completely on the state finances and resources to manage that mess out there. And that's a federal issue. It's not a state issue. So why should we, as the state taxpayers, have to pay for this continuing saga for decades to come when it should be paid for by federal tax dollars?
That is an excellent question. And how do you get them to get off the dime to pay attention to that? I mean, I know the Missouri legislature here is very budget conscious. You know, they have to balance their budget, and they're spending a lot of money on things that they, you know, don't want to spend money on already as it is. And, cleaning up a nuclear waste site sure isn't in the budget. I'm sure it's not on anybody's radar.
You know what's really funny, too? You just bring that up, too. We can't even get our local school district to help us. The school district, Pattonville School District, they want to do an emergency tax levy this fall because the casino is withholding tax money. So that's its own issue. But, you know, they're appealing to us for help. We've been begging them for months to come on. They have a high school that sits a little over a mile from this in a grade school. And we can't even get representatives of our school district to come to these meetings. It's ridiculous. I wonder if they're being paid.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Going with the government.
It goes on and on and on.
It really does.
Well, as far as I can tell, I mean, really what needs to happen here now, folks, is not only do you need to contact your representation, you need to also start contacting your news media outlets. So is there a place on your webpage where you have a listing of news media outlets for people to spam the news media?
We do. We do have a link. And, I will say the news media has been really good to us, and I know this is the kind of story they like. It's difficult to report because it is so many different things going on, but we really have had quite a bit of support. Obviously, we'd like a little bit more, and we thank you for the opportunity to talk on your show about it. But no, we do have a link that they can contact, and you know, the great thing, too, is that everything that you see on our Facebook page is current, you know, and a lot of the news media are actually on. They're actually members of Westlake, Landfill, and Coldwater Creek, just the facts. So anytime anything new comes out and we put it up, you know, Karen or myself will get a phone call, and, you know, that kind of starts it. So it's maybe we make their job a little bit easier by doing that.
Well, absolutely. Feed them the news so that they can get it out. I mean, and that's really what it takes. I mean, it's, from my experience in fighting other issues, you know, most of the news media, they do not have time to go digging into the issues. You know, if you can present it to them in a very digestible format, they're happy to deal with it. So, Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I will say one of the most interesting things that's happening this week with the news media is you mentioned, you know, why isn't anybody moving on this? Why? You've got some media that are starting to dig. You know, that's its own story, and they're starting to dig into that. And so I'm very interested to see what comes out of that.
Right. And so. And really, folks, the best way to get things, you know, this is all political, and the best way to make any headway in an issue like this is politics is about money and numbers. You know, and you know that they're worried about the money, but it's the numbers of people that are going to be screaming about this issue that are going to get it moving. So go to stlradwastelegacy.com. All that information is there about this issue. Contact information. Go to culturevigilante.wordpress.com and get that email spam and send emails right away. And Facebook page. Name those Facebook pages again for me one more time.
It's Westlake Landfill and Coldwater Creek, Just the Facts.
All right. Very good. Ladies, thank you so much for digging into all of this. Thank you for all the work that you've done to uncover, because I know that you guys have spent just countless hours contacting agencies and digging into government information, trying to get the real scoop on what's going on, building your web pages and trying to talk to people to get the word out. Thank you so much. We'll have you on again next week with another issue. There's so many issues to delve into and so much that needs to be done to get the word out about this. Folks, go to these web pages and go to these Facebook pages and join this issue. This is something that all Missourians need to be involved in. This is an issue that, I mean, if the St. Louis area goes under, and last week we talked about how serious this is leaking into the groundwater, not just near Coldwater Creek, not just in Maryland Heights or Florissant, this is going into the groundwater at the confluence of two of the major rivers in the country. It's going all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. And it's huge. This is not just in those isolated areas. This is affecting the St. Louis regional area, which will in turn affect the economy of the state of Missouri and Illinois.
Right.
This is huge. This is absolutely huge. So, you know, folks, this is something that really, in the end, it affects every single person in this state and beyond. So you need to get involved, and you need to start raising Cain and start
yes.
contacting your officials.
Thank you so much for letting
thank
us be
you
on
so
your
much.
Show.
Yeah, well, thank you, Lisa, very much.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all the work that you ladies have done, and we will talk to you again next week.
Okay.
Thanks, Lisa.
Very good.
Bye.
That's about going to wrap it up for us this week, folks. Thank you to all the guests. Thanks to Larry Connors and Dwayne Lester and Pastor Danny Holliday. Thanks to all the ladies that are working on this issue over in the Westlake Landfill area. My God, please do something about this, folks. Please get involved. You know, just an email. Just send an email. Just let your elected officials know that this is something on your radar that you really need. You really want their attention to. Don't let them blow it off, because they'll blow it off unless they start getting some news from you. Let's see. How should we wrap things up? We've got a few things to talk about. I want to let you know there is an event. Ben Evans of Heritage Action, who's going to be on with us next week, by the way, there's an event here on August 15th at Hacienda, I believe. Let's see. Political Director of Heritage Action will be in town August 15th to discuss his role in Heritage Action. Okay. Heritage Action, Hacienda Mexican Restaurant, and I'll post this information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org Facebook page and their calendar page. From 7 to 8 p.m., Russ will talk about the scorecard and what it means in D.C. Ben Evans was at the St. Charles County Packeter meeting last week. Very informative meeting. Heritage Action is a great organization that you need to be involved in if you want to kind of monitor and kind of kick things along in Washington, D.C. He'll be on next week to talk about that. Don't forget to come out August 29th and 30th to the Family Vision Library to see Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior. If you haven't had an opportunity to stop by our Secret Santa page on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition webpage, stop by there and make a small donation. We're trying to help some families preserve the magic and joy of Christmas for their kids this year. We raised $1,000 last year. We want to raise $2,000 this year. So any small donation, you know, $1, $5, anything that you have to give, you can do through PayPal. You can send us a check. We'll take a money order. Anything would be great. And actually, that really probably wraps it up for us this week. Thank you for joining us. Join Cynthia Davis next Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock right here at Missouri Grassroots Radio. She has a great program called Homefront. Dave will be on Saturdays with the Fair Tax Show, and we'll be here again next Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, with another great lineup for you here on Culture Vigilante. Until next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.